Uh-oh.
Drew and Leslie, it's back. Get this ish. Shit on. Back-ish. Interracial John. Shut the fuck up and listen. Interracial John. Interracial John. Interracial shit, motherfucker. Shut up and listen. Drew and Leslie. Interracial John.
Oh, it's been a while since I heard that. Shout out to my brother-in-law, Matt, for making up our theme song, literally on the spot.
My little boo. My little brother.
Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by Very White Guy.
And you are very white indeed. Well, we are back 2 weeks in a row from our year-long hiatus.
Is it 2 weeks in a row, or was it like 2 weeks ago?
No, it was last week.
It was?
Yep.
No.
Good
for us, I guess.
I guess.
Good for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy. People seem to be, the faithful 14 seem to be excited about our return. So here we are.
Give y'all a bell.
If this is your first time listening, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, or just search Interracial John or go to interracialjohn.com. You can also leave us feedback and you can follow us on Twitter at Interracial John. If you're talking about the show, please use hashtag the John. That's spelled J-A-W-N again. All right. So how have you been?
Super busy.
Yeah.
It's my time of the year, my big event is this week, like in a couple of days.
Yep.
And Dr. Smooth Mustache is not doing so well.
Mm.
And so it's been a lot, just really a lot going on.
Yeah.
But, I'm doing okay. I'm feeling pretty good.
That's good.
How about you?
I'm doing good. Busy as well. Very busy. So I think I mentioned on the last call or on the last show that I am part of the organizing team for Black Women for a new project focused on lifting up the voices and gathering Black women and non-men around the country and online. And so we had like a really big week this past week. We had our first digital meetup on Tuesday, and then we had four in-person meetups in Oakland, in Houston, in St. Louis, and here in Charlotte, which I hosted on Thursday night with my good friend Dr. Amin, which was really great, Dr. A. It was wonderful. It was so great. I hadn't actually thrown a party like that in a while, so I might have gone a little.
I want to let you and hear you talk more about the Black Women For Project, because I think it's just fantastic.
But sure.
Yeah, you went like all out party. I was like, well, I haven't seen.
It's been a while.
Party
since
mode.
Since I got to flex those muscles. So I was like a little excited about it. But it went really well.
It was nice.
And it was really wonderful. And we had a great conversation. And I met a few more women from here in Charlotte that I'll be able to connect with as well, which I'm really excited about. We've only been here 2 years, so yes, I've met some people and have some friends, but it's always great to have an additional like layer to add. And so that was really nice and just great. It was really diverse. I mean, we had like people all over the spectrum politically, some people that are like, fuck these systems, I don't even want to talk to none of these candidates or about them, to all the way to people who have already decided who they wanted to vote for, and everywhere in between. We have people, you know, just like I said, just, you know, something that actually Dr. Amin says all the time, which is that when Black people in a room, we already have all the diversity that we need, meaning like there's no additional diversity needed because we bring diversity with us. And so, that was really great and really wonderful. And the other events were equally beautiful. Shout out to Angela Peoples, who actually hit the road, left her baby, poor thing, poor Noir, and went to all three of the other meetups this past week. So she crisscrossed the country, St. Louis, then Oakland, then Houston. And so that's really exciting. This week we have coming up Minneapolis and Chicago, and we still have yet to come Milwaukee, Fort Lauderdale, and Atlanta. So yeah, we have been hitting it really hard in these streets.
And what was the general, you said there's a whole wide spectrum politically,
sure.
But our last podcast, you and I talked about, well, you know, we kind of have to show up, not have to, but we want to show up differently this election cycle. What was the, you know, on the scale of like, oh, business as usual to we totally got things differently, how are the women showing up that you invited to your meetup?
I think most of the women were definitely in agreement of just like, they've been thinking about that question a lot and they've been kind of contemplating it. I wouldn't necessarily say they've arrived at like any specific point. I wouldn't say I have either, but it's definitely something that we've all like noted and have been thinking about and talking about with each other, with our friends. And so that was really resonating. I feel like one of the things, you know, Angela and I were talking yesterday about the fact that one of the things, both the digital meetup, which went ridiculously well, we had like 35 women on the call. It was really beautiful. And also these in-person meetups that have really reinforced the things that we felt amongst ourselves as a planning team and also as a steering committee, which is a wider group of women who have been helping us make, like, you know, strategic decisions about the project. And so it's been good to kind of have that resonate with folks and be like, okay, we are on the right track. Like, people are feeling this way. People are kind of starving for these kind of spaces. I just think, you know, the complexities of being a Black woman or non-man in the world today is that even though we may be addressed, like, we aren't talked to, we're talked about. And so I think that's been one of the takeaways, is like, we're sick of being talked about or even at and not really involved in actual, like, real conversations. And so building those spaces to have those conversations, I think, has been really, like, resonating.
Well, you said the distinction between talked about, talked at, versus, say, included in the dialogue, yeah, in a material way. And if this is not appropriate to share, I can edit this out later. But you had said that one of the women at your meetup had said something about, you know, we need a prenup.
Yeah.
Black women need a prenup.
Yeah. So you can follow Capritat is the person who said that, Sherry. And she was like, yeah, we need, I think I posted it online, but yeah, she said, we need like an election prenup, which says, like, these are the things that we agreed to during the campaign, and these are the things that, these are the ways that we can hold you accountable after the campaign is over. And this is where we can find you, and this is how we can hold you accountable, and, like, these are the things we agree to before I even say I'm throwing myself behind
that's
you.
Very
so
different.
Like, that I think was definitely resonating with people as well.
And I think too, just generally, you know, I have enough folks online I follow and talk to a variety of Black folks. I just think the sort of, like, the Democratic Party is going to just get the Black vote, quote unquote. I think that's over for a lot of Black folk. They're tired of just sort of throwing their vote at Democrats.
So I think that it's been, you know, and I think this is a really unique primary. You know, we haven't, in my lifetime, we've never seen a Democratic primary with this many options involved in it, with multiple progressive candidates, or I'll put quotes around that if people don't think certain candidates are progressive, but certainly more than just the establishment and somebody who is anti-establishment, right? We have more spectrum of choice this year or this cycle. And so I think it also warrants a different attention, a different type of attention. When I'm not choosing between two people, you know, we all have to kind of really take a good hard look at, like, what are these different candidates going to do? Who do I want to be fighting with against across the other when I'm trying to organize? Who am I willing to organize? Who's organizable? I think for me, that's one of the two things that I've been just constantly kind of thinking about in terms of, you know, candidates and why I'm for the candidate. And we'll talk about that in a little bit about this weekend. And the candidate that I'm supporting, which is Elizabeth Warren, which is that, you know, one is I find Senator Warren to be somebody who is organizable, meaning, like, we've brought things to their campaign and talked to them and asked them to show up for things or do different things or just raise concerns, and they're very open to that, and we've seen shifts based on conversations we've had and things that, you know, that I've certainly been talking to the campaign along with many other amazing Black women, not associated with Black Women Four, but just generally, like, Ashley Marie Preston, Roxane Gay, lots of Black women that have been in close communication with the Warren campaign. And so that's one thing. And then the other part is this accountability piece, which is, I think, something that we all need to be really, like, critical of going into, this election period. Is like, I'm tired of reactive accountability with regard to, from the electorate to politicians. And I want proactive accountability baked into this process of deciding who, we want to support as the next candidate.
You know, and that's, I would say, you've encapsulated, like, what I'm hearing from Black voters that are friends of mine I talk to. On the white side, it's, a different flavor of kind of the same sort of meal, but it's almost like I don't want to say his name, but I was talking about, again, Dr. Mishmash with a mutual friend, like we're trying to do our thing, make sure he's okay. And I shared the picture of us this weekend, which we're talking about at the Liz Warren event in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And he said, oh, it's, she's, you know, she's got my vote. And immediately I just wish there was somebody else I could get excited about too. Mm. And I remember talking with you, and so I hear this a lot about from my 40-something-year-old white friends, that there hasn't been a time in the primaries where there's multiple people that they're excited about. And maybe I steered my friend. I said, I know you're not excited about multiple people, but there are people there are a lot of people excited about different candidates in the primary. And I just don't remember that in a while. And in terms of like get out the vote, like that's historically the way the Democrats win. Like if enough people vote, Democrats win. That's kind of like why the Republicans suppress Democratic votes and like suppress black people's votes and shit. But you got to have an actual strategy. And when Senator then Obama was running, it was literally hope and change. And it was more of a slogan that people wanted to believe in and get behind. But then, you know, argue, if you will, that you know, he didn't do as much or could have done more, whatever you want to say. But Elizabeth Warren's not out on like a hope and change. There's an actual, not to like use her thing, but there's an actual plan. Like, you know, like at her stump speech yesterday, there was a couple of really, I don't know if they were like planted, but like really pointed, difficult questions. And she answered them really well. And I liked a lot of what she said. And just, it's interesting. It's not a hope and change. It's a, this is what we're going to do. I don't know if that makes sense. And I'm not trying to like shit on PBO. I love President Barack Obama, but I do remember, you know, that election cycle when he was in the primary, it was almost like a feeling and a desire more than any actual, I don't know, plan. And it feels like Elizabeth's got a little bit, you know, like, hey, I'm going to take on corruption. And
well, I think that the, it's so, you know, I have trouble comparing campaigns, any campaign to a previous campaign cycle because they're so different from one another.
We're in uncharted territory now.
And
anyway,
we're always in uncharted territory. Let's be clear about that. I think that there's this like notion that like prior to, I don't know when, everything was that there was some like assumptions that can be made. And I think, well, at least during my lifetime, if we walk through the presidents that I've been alive for, every single one of them have had like reasons why it was not necessarily historic, but that it was different, right?
So you could, I guess, you could openly colluding with the opposition to fuck with elections is, I feel, new. But go on, I'm with you.
Opposition. What's that mean?
The openly colluding with other countries to fuck up with the elections, I think, is our elections. I haven't like admitting to that. That seems, but you're right. There's nothing. It's not new. It's just
I'm not even talking about it new. I'm not talking about it in that way. I'm just saying that like. How am I trying to say this? What I'm trying to say is that every election cycle is very different from one another, and each one has something that makes it difficult, different, harder for specific individuals involved in each of the campaign cycles. So if we go back to like Bill Clinton, for example, on his first time at bat, that was very unusual for a sitting president to be unseated, just all of that was really unusual. Him being from the South, him being the son of a single mom. Like there's a lot of times we've seen like kind of things be different, right? I just think it's hard to compare President Barack Obama and the climate that he took over in after George W. Bush's 8 years in office to now. I don't think that they're the same playing field. I think that, we can say a lot of terrible things about W, but like the government was running, right? So President Obama took over in a way that was like, okay, we've got some things we need to write. There's some things we need to like, I don't know. It was a very much of a like hope, change. We can make things better type of thing.
I guess if you're
gonna, this shit now.
Yeah. The TLDR, you're running on a throw the baby out.
Is a whole different landscape. And I also think that the populace is much more informed than they were, you know, 12 years ago. We're talking about a younger voting demographic that has been very in tune to the political landscape. And we've had like significant social upheaval. So Yeah, I mean, any candidate that's wishing to pierce through is going to have some fucking plans. Like, literally, that to me, it's the only way for people to really, like, make an informed decision. And yeah. I think that's what folks are looking to do. That's been my experience, is that people really want to make an informed decision. And so I think that that's been kind of, like, a good strategy for Senator Warren. And it's funny to me because you remember when she started coming out with these plans, everybody was like, oh, nobody cares about these plans. No one's going to read them. And like now every motherfucker out here got a plan for everything, which is hilarious to me.
I thought even not beyond her plan, she just really, and I help me because I'll butcher the talking points, but she had like three bullets. And one was she was going to attack corruption.
Yeah.
Two was she was going to make institutional change.
Yep. Structural change.
Structural change. Yep. And three was really protect our democracy. And she talked more about Citizens United and some of the affronts to you know, make sure everyone has a vote. And like, I can get behind those three things. I haven't heard candidates talk that plainly, you know. I don't think those are plans more than just broad strokes of I thought anyway, but can we talk a different thing? I'm gonna go a different direction.
Go whatever direction you want.
Man, oh my fucking God. Like, what? I'm creeped out how much Elizabeth Warren reminds me of my fucking mom.
Okay, so we rewind. Tell everybody know. So Senator Warren was in South Carolina, Rock Hill, South Carolina yesterday, which is only about 25, 30 minutes from our house. And so we got invited to a little meet and greet with her ahead of the rally that was taking place at Clinton College, which is a very small HBCU in Rock Hill, only like 200 students. And then we had the meet and greet with her with, I don't know, maybe like 30 other people, yeah, maybe probably. About that. And then after, you know, we got to be very close to the stage to watch the actual the speeches that happened. So that was your first time meeting Senator Warren. So I'm curious, like, what did you think of Senator Warren besides the fact that she looks eerily like your mom?
I mean, when you say eerily, she's got my mom's hair like from behind.
Yeah.
Like shoulders up from behind. I'd literally come up and hug her and be like, Mom, whoa, sorry. Like,
well, she's taller than your mom.
She's taller than my mom.
But yeah. Yeah, and they look very much alike.
So I don't know what my first impressions. Very energetic. Had, mm-hmm. had a lot, and that's an odd thing to say,
yeah.
But had just a lot of energy. And like I said, the responses she had specifically, and I won't go into the detail, but I would say that it was nuanced, but a very appropriate and a very progressive stance on, I would say, the state of Israel, right? Like, I would say expansion of the West Bank, more specifically, gun control.
And I think actually that's like her like weakest. Like areas like foreign policy.
I agree. And around, but it was still pretty good.
It was
still,
if you say so.
It was the least declarative of her positions.
Yeah, because I think her position is weak as fuck.
And it was if
and I
Netanyahu
say that like I
this.
Said, I've already said on the call, like I support Senator Warren. I'm very public about my support for her candidacy. But also, like I said, I'm looking at it for a candidate that, because there is no candidate that doesn't have things that
they're
they
not going
to
tick
on.
Every box.
It doesn't exist. It just will never exist. In fact, not in this bullshit ass country or any other for that matter. I don't think that's how systems work when they're set up to govern. But anyways, the only way that something like that is true is if it's there is no leader. Right. We're talking that would be like a shared government model, a shared leadership sure. model that doesn't look like this. But anyways, so I say all that to say, like, I think that Senator Warren's position on Palestine and Israel is trash, as is most of her foreign policy. And it's definitely something I've been incredibly vocal with the campaign about, personally speaking, anyways.
Well, but the other two I didn't think were nearly as weak was gun control.
No,
and
she's got a good plan on that one.
Just like the Medicare for all and her 2% or 2-cent tax over the first $50 million. Yep. Just and it was a very plain way of speaking. I think that comes from her being a educator and a professor and a law school professor. Like, she's been able to educate people about finance and all these very sophisticated things. So she's able to, and she has a turn of phrase. What does she say? She says,
let me explain it this way.
The way it is, or this way.
No,
think of it this way.
Think of it this way. Yeah.
She goes,
or
think of this
she'll
way.
Say, let me explain it this way.
It's always really good.
Like, it's always a repositioning and allows her to like restate her larger point in a really like digestible way. She's very good at it.
Yeah.
Well, she's like a librarian. I always say that, like, the way she's able to like take these complex things and make them.
Yeah.
At least her positioning on them. I wouldn't say that she can explain everything, but I think she's really able to get across position.
She took the analogy of highway deaths and society deciding to make highway deaths just a collective concern, and everything from seatbelts to speed limits to airbags to innovations we didn't even know about have come from that. And, you know, it was like, hey, we're going to hold car manufacturers responsible. And she's like, listen, it's now time that we collectively decide to do something about gun deaths and hold gun manufacturers responsible. Yeah. And I thought that might have been her last piece. She punctuated her rally with that. Mm-hmm. But then just real affable, real, I don't know. I don't want to say excited to vote for a candidate in a primary. I think maybe since Bill Clinton, but even when I honestly don't remember who Bill Clinton ran against, I feel like it was in my state a foregone conclusion by the time it got to my vote.
Yeah. I don't even know if there was, he must have ran against somebody. I don't remember though. That's the first election I voted in.
Me too.
The second election, his re-election, not.
So his first was mine.
His first. Yeah, but you're old. So
he went against Ross Perot. Perot.
That was
Bill
a third party though.
Yeah.
So that wasn't who he went against in the primary. I'd have to do some research, and I don't know. Like I said, that's definitely before my time. My first time voting was voting for Bill Clinton for re-election. So
I got you.
Yeah. But anyways, I digress. So anyways, I was really happy to have you meet the senator for the first time and get your impressions of her, both in person and talking with her, and then also, you know, just kind of the feeling of the rally and everything. I think, you know, they still have a lot of work to do around the black vote, significantly lacking at the rally were black people. I will say that in our meet and greet, that was majority black people, which was good to see.
Yep.
But in the larger crowd, it was definitely not. And I also just shout out to Maya Slaughter, who's the South Carolina political director for Team Warren, for the Warren campaign, who was so gracious and wonderful to us and helping us get into the meet and greet and everything. And so Maya, whose birthday was yesterday as well. So she's a black woman. Senator Warren has the most amazing black women working on her campaign. And so Deshauna Bernard, who is her director of African-American outreach, is fantastic. And so anyways, I say all of that to say that not only is Senator Warren great, but for me, it's been really wonderful to interact with her campaign staff that have been really receptive. And I can tell by the people she's surrounding herself with, which are not just like, yes, women that are really there to build a different kind of campaign. And we've seen that play out with, you know, this night school thing that they're doing to help train volunteers, which I think is really, really smart. The selfie line, the calling people when they donate, it's just all of these things that I think are really innovative and really show that this is a 2019 campaign and not a campaign that's doing things the way that it's always been done. And I think that's what it's going to take for a woman to win this particular contest, regardless of the year. So
yeah, and you know, my analysis is going to be flawed and masculine and fucked up, but there was something about Hillary's presentation that's very different about Senator Warren's presentation. I don't know what it is, and it's probably, again, like something like I'm a man, so it's probably like messed up regards to like this type of woman or that type of woman. I don't know what it is, but she. Yeah, it's just a very different.
Well, I think there's schools of politicians. I think, you know, you're talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton, who came through kind of a creation of a politician process that really emphasized that a woman needed to show strength above all things, because they kind of needed to be seen as like the men. And I think
had to hang with the men,
there's a really specific, you know, kind of female political model for that. And Senator Warren is definitely not that. I think part of it is that she didn't become a politician until 2012 was a very regular person prior to that, teaching law school and teaching public school. And so I feel like that means that she wasn't put through that same machine that a lot of her same era of political candidates have been put through. And so I think that's what makes her look and feel a little bit different. And I think that's a valid thing to say. And I think, yes, it does involve the like patriarchal gaze, but I think it's also like true.
Well, thank you for framing it in a way that didn't make me sound horrible, because I was feeling really fucked up for saying it. But that makes sense, what you said. And yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So
do you think that gives her more success in today's day and age?
I think it's a both and, right? I think, like, yes, I think it's made her stand out from, say, a Kamala Harris or an Amy Klobuchar, because I would consider those two women from that other cloth, a much more traditional kind of, like, stance as a politician, you know. And it's funny because I don't think that we ever have these conversations about men. And we could in this race, we definitely could talk about how much more approachable Julian Castro is as opposed to, say, Cory Booker, or how Pete Buttigieg is definitely playing up this, like, aw shucks thing, versus a Beto who's kind of trying to be the, like, cool dude bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we do have the opportunity to have those conversations about these candidates. I just don't think any of them are viable, so I don't really bother talking about that.
I mean, but even you say we don't have these conversations at the same time, and, like, I'm not trying to, like, be all crappy and stuff, but 45 is a complete disaster as any sort of politician. And on the Democratic side, like, don't disrespect, Bernie's always yelling at people. He looks all fucking disheveled. Like, he just, like, he's wagging his finger at you. Like, nothing about him is in that, again, like, if you want to talk about the appropriate mold or this kind of cut from that cloth, like, I don't know, like, Bernie's, I find him off-putting as a politician.
Right.
But nobody, we're not having that discussion.
I think
he might be just off-putting enough.
I think people do. I mean, when you have Larry David playing you on Saturday Night Live, I think that says a specific thing. Yeah. And that, like, I don't know, in my head, it's hard after I see Larry play him to remember what Bernie really looks like, which is really bad. Because then I just see Larry and hear him. It's really too, it's almost like too good of an impression.
It's a really accurate.
It's so accurate, and it's also heightened. You know, it's like when he
caricaturally accurate.
Yeah, it's like when he used to just do the voice of what's the dude? Yes, George Steinbrenner. It's like that. It's like, do I remember what Steinbrenner really sounded like? I don't know anymore, because all I hear is Larry David as him. So I feel like that's what this is like. And I mean, I'm mad he brought it back, because I had real Bernie back in my head, and now Larry's back again.
I feel like they both have the same bald cut. Like,
yeah,
like,
so I'm saying they look too much alike. Their accents are very similar. So, like, just naturally. So I don't think Larry David does much except for, like, just heightens himself, and so it's like an amplification of the neurotic character that Larry David, like, plays on television. So I don't know, it's, like, funny to me. Anyways, I digress. We've talked about a lot of politics this episode. And we also are doing very short episodes now. So your big event is this week, which is really great. I'm super excited.
Can I just crow about it?
Like, yeah, please.
I don't know why. My job, I'm not going to, there's people that listen that might connect the two. So I'm not going to, like, shit on my job, but, like, it's a job. Right, it's a job. Like, everyone has a job. You don't love your job, like, maybe some people do, but I don't love my job. It's a job, but I love doing this event. And you and I used to work on it together, and that's sad that we don't get to work on it together. But I get to talk to you about it and show you all this stuff. And this is the 11th year that we've done it. It's like a big old flagpole for the company and the industry. It's like the biggest day in terms of traffic and sales and a bunch of number of metrics. I think last year we had over 500,000 minutes of video consumed, and I'm trying to hit 750 this year. I'm trying to get a big increase. And just the tools have gotten, I run like basically a television studio. I now have 4 monitors, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Just like, if you haven't worked with 4 monitors before, you're missing out, man.
I don't know.
These gaming
about
kids
that.
With the 4 monitors is fucking awesome.
I don't know if I agree with that.
I'm doing like picture in a picture, graphic overlay. I'm doing like these things swiping and fading in. And it's just like, I feel like before it was, we went kind of like a little bit more than a webinar. And now it's like, no, this is like a television studio. We're putting on television productions, and it's just really awesome. I love it. And I enjoy it, even though it's a lot of work. And the content this year, I'm really excited about. We've got a lot of great stuff, and I have a broader strategy for that content, which I think is kind of new for me. And people like it. The event's always really well received, you know, like the boss doesn't really, he's not like a pat on the back kind of guy,
no,
but
these
events, thousands of people are just like, you know, very effusive in their thanks and their feedback, and it's just really fun. It's a little altruistic, you know, because nobody like pays me to do this well. Nobody pays me extra to do it bigger, but I like it. So I kind of get, I mean, you have to have something, I guess, to get excited about and dig into. And I really got excited about, well, people on the Twitters know I had a huge deal I was working on for 10 months implode in July. So it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I put a lot of effort into this event because I was feeling kind of like down about that deal imploding.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited about it.
I'm glad. I think it's going to be great. I'm glad I'm actually here this year to support you.
Yes.
I put a moratorium on travel for this week, like in January, just so that I could be here to make sure you get fed and that you have all the things that you need, because these are really long days for you. And so that's really great. I've been home for a really long time, so it's not even like,
no, that's been nice. It's been really great. I appreciate it.
Which is awesome. Yeah, so that's great. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited for you. I hope everything goes really well and that there aren't any issues or anything.
No, there will be. My mental health approach to these events now
is like just what will go wrong.
Something's going to go wrong.
Right.
Something will go. I'll leave a mic open. I'll put the wrong content with something. I'll fuck something up.
Yeah. Right,
because it's a lot of moving pieces, and like the more complicated it gets, the more likely I'm gonna mess something up. But the audience has gotten really understanding, gotten really, I wouldn't say forgiving, but they've I think come along with us. And at one point these were like flash based really intensive bandwidth and networking computing events. Like if you were in a non high speed internet location, you just couldn't even participate.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to away from flash HTML5, and then we had like high and low res, and now we're doing mixed bandwidth so you can watch on a cell phone. Like we've got it pretty good. You know, we've got it to a point where I think the little hiccups are, I mean, listen, you weren't here the year it happened.
Yeah.
But there was a year where the whole platform crashed. This was done. Like, oh, event's over. Like it's, you know, like the worst has happened. So now I'm just like, whatever happens, happens. Because I'll just stress myself out too much. Because like you said, it is like literally 11-hour days, 3 days in a row. And it's 11 hours of hardcore vigilance running a television studio, monitoring sound and mm-hmm. input. And not just a studio, but like, you know, each day there's 10, 11, 12 pieces of content with different speakers on different time zones and panels. And it's a bunch. So I'll fuck something up, but I don't mind. I used to really stress myself out about it, but I've gotten too old, and you've worked too hard on me. You've worked too much with me to let these little mess ups kind of derail me. So
absolutely.
Something's going to happen. We'll just see what it is.
Yeah,
hopefully
we'll
it won't
see.
Be day one, segment one.
So what are your thoughts around, and we'll just take 5 minutes around this like impeachment stuff. I've been like not even really paying attention. I've just been like basically whatever group chats I'm in, if they're talking about it there, I've picked up like the things that they're saying. But that's pretty much
it. I feel like so we watched Saturday Night Live for the first time in years last night, or this today from, I guess the episode was last night.
Yeah.
And it was relatively funny. Woody mm-hmm. Harrelson did a pretty good job. There's a couple of good skits. But there was one where Kenan Thompson played on like a MSNBC type show, a pundit that was just like, nothing's going to happen. They're all like, this is impeachment. Ain't going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. And so like, you know, like part of me is just like, the Senate's just not going to do shit.
Right.
And then the other, like, so half of me is like, the Senate's not going to do shit. The other half is, you know, like going to war in Iran, on some level, this galvanizes his base. You know, like I just said, we need to, Democrats win when there's a large get out the vote and a push to get out the vote. This, I'm under the witch hunt of impeachment. That's a get out the vote strategy. The GOP raised more money in 24 hours after the Pelosi announced her impeachment than they had in like 2 years. So I don't know. I'd love to think, I'm just real cynical, I'd love to think this would have some impact, and I hope it does, but meh.
I don't think it's going to do anything. So that's just my opinion.
That's just, you're Kenan Thompson. Like,
I am, because I've been saying this from the get-go. Also, like, I hate to call shit a distraction, because I feel like we can do more than one thing at the same time. And by all means, if you impeach him, whatever the fuck. Get him out of there. I don't give a shit. Like, I mean, I do. I want him gone. Like, there's no, like, if, ands, or buts about it. But also, like, I want Mike Pence gone. I want this entire administration gone. I want this entire fucking racist ass construct of government gone, right? Like, I want a lot of things. And so for me, it's like Trump and Pence and this administration and the machinations that got them to the White House. Like, those things are structural problems and aren't individually necessarily, like, about him. And I find this fixation on impeachment to be really, like, person specific, and it also gives, like, the GOP, like, something that they think they can do. Or I don't know, I don't like how it, like, allows them to, like, it could potentially allow them to, like, disassociate themselves
from Trump,
from him, and and his rise. And so I feel like that part of it feels really, like, like, gross to me. And
that'll absolutely will happily hung their hat on his racist rhetoric to get to where they're at, and then happily hang him out to dry and stay there, you know.
Yeah,
if possible.
So I'm kind of like,
you bring up a good point that I haven't heard enough people say: impeach him, and what's going to happen? We end up having Pence.
Yeah, no thank you.
I'm not saying don't impeach, but, like, you, they've all got to go.
Yeah, like, everybody sucks. I hate them all. What are you doing over there? Can you hear that?
Drinking water.
Oh, your water bottle.
Hydrating. Yeah.
You got to hydrate.
All for the water. Yeah, that was I never told you that, but the business partner that fell through, they used to yell at me just constantly about not drinking enough water.
Really?
Yeah. I drink quite a bit more now. That's funny. They were a little bit obnoxious about it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they were a lot obnoxious about it, but I'm drinking more water. God damn it. Guess that's it. I don't have any other, like, segues into something. What about you?
No, I don't have anything else. I think that's it. Oh, we were supposed to do a question. So I do have a question for folks to kind of ponder. And so this is, like, what would it take for you to come out and publicly support one of the Democratic nominees for POTUS if you haven't already done so? I'm curious to hear, or I should say, I want people to start thinking about that. Like, whoever you're, candidate is, if you love Beto, if you're really into Kamala, if you are Bernie or bust, just joking, nobody should be Bernie or bust. Just saying that officially, that's a terrible stance.
No, we came back on the last episode and we both talked about our personal thing is you should vote and you should be registered to vote. But if you decide not to vote, that's entirely up to you. And
sure. That doesn't have anything to do with my question. My question is, what would it take if you, because I feel like I've been listening to so many people, not just even Black people or anybody, just generally people be like interested in individual candidates, but, like, not talking about it publicly, or I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think it is early, but I also think that this race is really different. And so I feel like,
you know, when you say different, I'm thinking another question. I've been thinking about this.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly how to phrase it, okay, but what are anti-racist white people going to do? What are we going to do to more effectively bind those that hold their nose and vote for 45 as just overtly racist? Like, you know, like, there's this whole, like, I said it last year, and I know you didn't like this sort of framing, but I still use it as an analogy, even though this person's still fucking, like, horrible and shit. But 43 and 41, mm-hmm, Presidents Bush and Bush both voted straight Republican tickets, but did not vote for 45 for president. And I'm not giving them any, like, ooh, this person's great, look at John McCain, ooh, what a great person. But it still is like, there's a lot of fucking people that voted for him and thought, like, well, I'm just because of the party, because of this, better than her, or I'm conservative fiscally, whatever they think they are. A vote for that motherfucker needs to be, like, I don't know. Like, I wish I had gone to that when I went to disrupt the Klan rally that they called his fucking, his rallies before, yeah, he was president. If I had sat there with a camera and just, like, recorded everybody walking in and then, like, took out ads and put all these people on fucking TV, these are all your neighbors. It wouldn't have done shit there in Grand Rapids, Michigan. But I don't know, just something to more effectively shame. And literally, I don't know if shame is going to do it, but something. Because, you know, maybe that's even the wrong way to do it, focusing on
that. I don't,
like,
why? What does that have to do with what you're going to do? Like, I feel like that's such a, like, focusing on people that are already for this conversation yeah. lost? Like, what's the Fuck purpose em. Of it? Like you're quoting De Niro now. He talked about, he did that on TV on CNN today. He said, fuck them. That's right. Fuck them. What y'all need to be focused on is like, who are the white folks that didn't vote last time, yeah. who weren't energized at all, who were, I would say, more apathetic. Like the apathy piece, I think that's a really good engagement kind of thing to talk to people about. Like if you're feeling apathetic, like those are folks you should be reaching out to. If they're feeling like, the news can make you feel apathetic, like very easily. Shit is depressing. Amazon's burning, fucking, you know, shit's blowing up. Water's dirty everywhere. We have hurricane after hurricane. Like literally, it's a fucking nightmare out here. So I think that it's a really like critical piece to like talk about. You know, my friend Ariel Newton said the other night, she was talking about how she was showing up differently in 2020, and she was saying that, you know, she really in 2016 didn't have a lot of like grace and understanding for where people were, and that this time she was not approaching it that way. And I really like, it hit me right in my heart to be like, yes, like we need to like see each other's humanity, but also like we can be selective in who we're targeting that humanity towards, right? We can make you know, concerted efforts and decisions about where we want to put our energies and not put them. And I just think that like focusing on people that are in support of this horrible person, like I don't think it's a valuable use of anyone's time. I just think it's silly from my perspective.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm not a white person, so obviously I don't have nearly as many of those folks to be taking responsibility for. But also, I just think that, like, you know, there's a lot of people that just didn't vote or weren't interested, and for all good reasons. Like, I wasn't that into it. You know, I was just like voting because I vote, and so I was going to go vote. And I think that the more conversations we can have earlier, the better off things are.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I'm certainly at this point. I think I might have been. I don't think I was openly for any candidate at this point in 2016 or even 2015. I think I was just like, I'm a Democrat.
Right.
And I'm trying to think at this point, was it really just HRC and Bernie? I think there wasn't much.
There was McNally or whatever that dude is. Mark. Is it Mark? O'Malley. Sorry.
O'Malley
from Baltimore.
O'Malley, right. O'Malley.
So he was in the race for a hot minute, and then, you know, he dropped out like fairly early. And then, you know, Bernie went all the way to the convention. So it was a two-person race for the majority of it. And I think that's another thing that's real is, you know, I've been hearing a lot of black folks just feel like, I don't need to come off for anybody because the DNC is going to do whatever the fuck it wants to anyways. And I think that, like, that's valid. I can see exactly why you feel that way. And if you feel that way, as I have felt in the past, like I feel like I want to be able to say that I tried to do whatever I could to disrupt that from being the case. And so I guess that's the stance that I'm taking, and also respecting where other people are. I think that was one of the things that was really beautiful. All the meetups that we've been holding at Black Woman 4 is this, like, that the space is elastic enough to hold all of those views at once, that people that are like, fuck this system, I hate voting, I don't believe in any of this shit, they're all a bunch of liars, and I'm totally into this candidate, I'm super energized by them, that can exist in the same room of black women. Yeah. Like that can, we can look at each other and be like, I see where you're coming from and I get it. And the same, you know, both of those positions can exist in the same space. I don't think that's true in very many other spaces besides when black women gather, because I don't think that most other, you know, black women and non-men, I should say, because we do, and Black Women 4 have lots of gender non-conforming and non-binary folks that are at our meetups and part of the community. But I feel like those spaces are like we're in tune with each other's humanity in a really specific way that doesn't exist in a lot of other spaces. So
you know, and I'm not gonna I don't know how to say this, but even if I'm kind of like summating everything we've been talking about, it's more of a focus inward on us and what we can do versus on anybody else.
Yeah.
And even, you know, like Miss Peebles, right? You know, had that viral moment about 53% of white women. Now she's organizing with you and other black women and non-men. I just think it's a very different approach.
It is different. Hopefully it'll bear good fruit. We'll see.
Hey, when black women get together and do shit, y'all succeed often. I'll bet on you and Angela.
Mm-hmm. All righty. I think else? That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, that's way too quiet.
That's so quiet. You got to turn ZZ up. That girl is so grown now. I got to have her leave for that.
I'm going to give one more.
High five. Really, you going to do one more time?
Good night, everybody.
High five.